You've probably felt it without thinking about it. You climb into an unfamiliar airplane, configure for the approach, reach full flaps on short final, and something is different. The nose pitches more than you expected, or the airplane slows down faster than you're used to, or the approach speed and the checklist surprises you one way or the other. And most of the time, you adapt, you land, and you move on. But that difference you felt, there's a reason for it. And it starts inside the wing. I'm Tower. This is ATIS on Radio Hangar, and today we're going deep on something every pilot uses every flight, but most pilots couldn't fully explain. We're talking about flaps, not just what they do in general terms, but why four different designs exist, what each one actually achieves aerodynamically, and what that means for you in the pattern. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with the fundamentals. Because the fundamentals matter here, when you extend flaps, you're doing two things at once. You're increasing lift and you're increasing drag. Those two effects are always present. The question is the ratio between them, and how that ratio changes as you move through different deflection angles. That ratio is dictated almost entirely by what kind of flap design your aircraft uses. There are four primary designs in widespread use: plane flaps, split flaps, slotted flaps, and Fowler flaps. They represent roughly a century of aeronautical engineering evolution, each one solving a problem the previous design could not fully address. Let's work through them in order. The plane flap is exactly what the name suggests, a section of the trailing edge of the wing that is hinged so it can rotate downward. When you deflect it, you increase the curvature of the wing, what engineers call camber. Increased camber means the airflow over the top of the wing has to travel a longer path, which accelerates it, drops the local pressure, and generates more lift. Simple concept. And it works. The plane flap has been around since nearly the beginning of powered flight. Early aviators recognized almost immediately that some kind of variable geometry on the wing would allow them to fly faster in cruise and slower for landing. The plane flap was the most intuitive answer. A hinged surface, minimal complexity, straightforward to build and maintain. The limitation is drag. At small deflection angles, say 10 to 15 degrees, a plane flap gives you a reasonable lift increase without excessive drag. That's useful for takeoff. When you want more lift, but you still need to accelerate. But push a plane flap past about 30 degrees and the drag starts to dominate. The airflow over the upper surface of the flap begins to separate from the surface. That separation kills efficient lift production and generates high drag, which at that point is not doing you much good on final. So plane flaps are useful, but they have a ceiling. You will find them on a lot of older and simpler designs, light sport aircraft, some home builds, older trainer types. The manufacturing simplicity makes them attractive where low-speed performance demands are modest. The split flap was the industry's first real attempt to get more out of the basic concept. Here's how it differs. Instead of hinging the entire trailing edge section so the whole thing rotates down, a split flap only moves the lower surface. The upper surface of the wing stays in its original position. The lower surface deflects downward independently. When that lower surface drops away, it creates a cavity behind the trailing edge of the wing. Air flowing around the lower surface of the wing at speed gets caught up in that cavity and forms a region of turbulent, low-velocity air trapped behind the wing. That turbulent cavity turns out to be aerodynamically useful. It acts as a pressure trap that allows the wing to maintain lift while simultaneously generating significant drag. The split flap actually produces slightly more lift than a comparable plane flap, and because of that cavity effect, it generates more drag too. Now, more drag on approach is not inherently a bad thing. In fact, it was often exactly what pilots needed. The split flap was widely adopted during the 1930s and into the war years precisely because it gave pilots better control over descent rate and approach speed without sacrificing lift. The Douglas DC-3 used split flaps. Most of the large American bombers of World War II used split flap designs. The Grumman Wildcat, the early Hellcat variants, many of the Navy carrier aircraft of that era used split flaps. Getting into short fields, carrier decks, rough strips, and forward areas, the drag was an operational asset. The downside is the same fundamental limitation as the plane flap. At high deflection angles, separation over the flap surface limits how much lift you can extract. You reach a point of diminishing returns on lift while drag continues to climb. For an era of aircraft operating at relatively low speeds and modest performance demands, split flaps were adequate. For the jet age, something better was needed. The slotted flap represented a genuine step change in flap aerodynamics, and it remains the most common flap design in the general aviation fleet today. The defining feature of a slotted flap is the gap. When you extend a slotted flap, a controlled opening forms between the trailing edge of the main wing and the leading edge of the flap. That gap is not accidental. It is precisely engineered, and the air that flows through it is the key to why slotted flaps work so much better than what came before. Here is the aerodynamic problem that the slot solves. Anytime air flows over a surface and the surface curves away from it, the airflow has to do work to stay attached. Near the trailing edge of a wing or flap, that airflow has been traveling a long distance. It has lost energy to friction along the way. When low-energy airflow tries to follow a surface that is curving away from it, it separates. It peels away from the surface and becomes turbulent. That separation is the enemy of lift and the source of inefficient drag. The slot addresses this by channeling high-pressure air from underneath the wing through the gap and onto the upper surface of the flap. That high-pressure air accelerates as it passes through the slot and exits as a fast-moving stream over the flap's upper surface. It injects energy back into the boundary layer, the thin layer of air closest to the surface, re-energizing it so it can stay attached through higher deflection angles. The practical result is significant. A slotted flap can be deflected to much steeper angles than a plane or split flap before separation becomes a problem. That means more lift and a better lift-to-drag ratio in the approach configuration. The Cessna 172, the most produced aircraft in history, uses a single slotted flap, most Piper models, the Diamond DA-40. Nearly every modern trainer or light tourer you can name is running some variant of slotted flap design. If you have done most of your training in the last several decades, slotted flaps are what you know, even if you have never heard them called that. And the engineers did not stop at a single slot. Double-slotted flaps add a second slot with a small leading-edge element called a vane positioned ahead of the main flap surface. That vane creates a second controlled airflow injection point. The result is an even greater ability to sustain attached airflow at high deflection angles, producing more lift with less separation-induced drag than a single-slotted design. You find double-slotted flaps on high-performance business aircraft, some turboprops, and the lighter end of the regional airliner category aircraft, where the lift demands of short-field operations or steep approaches push beyond what a single-slotted design can comfortably deliver, but the most sophisticated flap design in widespread use is the Fowler flap. And to understand why it is in a different category, you have to understand one thing it does that no other flap type does: it moves rearward. When you extend a Fowler flap, it does not simply rotate downward around a hinge. It travels aft along a track system before it drops into the down position. That rearward motion increases the total surface area of the wing. Think about what that means. The other flap types we have discussed all work with the same wing area. They reshape the wing, but they do not make it larger. A Fowler flap actually makes the wing bigger. It extends the chord of the wing, which is the distance from the leading edge to the trailing edge, by physically adding more wing surface behind the original trailing edge. More wing area means more lift at any given airspeed. Combined with the increased camber from the downward deflection and the slotted design that keeps airflow attached, the Fowler flap produces dramatically more lift than any other common design. This is how modern commercial aircraft make the numbers work. A Boeing 737 is optimized in its basic wing geometry for efficient cruise at around 35,000 feet and close to 500 miles per hour. That wing shape, if you tried to fly it slow enough to land, would require approach speeds that would make any normal runway impractical. But with full Fowler flap extension, the wing essentially transforms. The flaps slide back and down, increasing the wing's effective area by a substantial percentage. The slots keep the airflow attached at the high deflection angles required. The aircraft can slow to approach speeds in the range of 130 to 140 knots with control and stability. That is the engineering bargain. The Fowler flap enables design for cruise, transform for landing. Fowler flaps appear on high-performance piston singles as well, not just airliners. The Piper Malibu family uses Fowler flaps. The Mooney Acclaim uses them. Several of the Beechcraft turboprop designs. Any aircraft where the designer wanted to squeeze serious low-speed lift out of a wing that also needed to be fast in cruise is a candidate for Fowler flap design. The trade-off is complexity. Fowler flaps require track systems, actuators, sometimes jack screw mechanisms or hydraulic drives to move the flap both aft and down in a controlled sequence. The mechanical systems involved are more maintenance intensive than a simple hinge. On a commercial airliner, the flap and slat system is among the more complex mechanical systems on the aircraft, and that complexity shows up in inspection intervals, component life limits, and maintenance costs. Now, let's connect this to your actual flying, because all of this has direct practical implications. The type of flap your aircraft uses explains the pitch characteristics you experience when you configure for landing. Plane and split flap designs tend to produce a more pronounced pitching moment when you extend them, because the change in the pressure distribution across the wing is somewhat abrupt. You add flaps and the nose wants to pitch in a specific direction, usually initially up with the lift increase, and then potentially down as drag builds. Slotted and Fowler flap designs generally produce more graduated, progressive handling through the flap extension sequence. That is part of why modern trainers use them. The aerodynamic behavior is more forgiving and predictable for a student working through the approach for the first time. The go-around with Fowler flaps is worth specific attention. When you advance the throttle and begin flap retraction on a go-around in an aircraft with Fowler flaps, particularly going from full flaps to an intermediate setting, you are not just changing the angle of the flap, you are reducing wing area. The cord is physically shortening as the flap retracts back along its track. That means a step reduction in lift that is larger in magnitude than what you would experience retracting simple hinged flaps. This is why transport category aircraft go-around procedures specify a deliberate, sequenced flap retraction. You do not yank from full flaps to up in one motion. You retract incrementally, letting the aircraft accelerate and establish a positive climb rate between steps. The Fowler flap physics are the underlying reason that procedure is written the way it is. For any aircraft, flap extension speed, VFE, is a hard limit. The white arc on your airspeed indicator tells you the range in which you can extend flaps. The upper end of that arc is not a caution. It is a structural boundary. Exceed it with flaps extended and you risk damage to the flap structure, the tracks on a Fowler design, the hinges on a plane or split design. The load that builds on a flap surface at high speed is considerable. Respect the white arc as you would any structural limit. One more topic worth raising, flap asymmetry. On any aircraft where the left and right flap panels are driven independently, or where the drive system can fail in a way that leaves one panel extended and the other retracted, the resulting rolling moment can be significant and immediate. This is particularly relevant to twin-engine aircraft and larger singles with more sophisticated flap drive systems. The complexity of a Fowler flap track system means that a mechanical failure could result in asymmetric extension in ways that a simple hinged flap is less susceptible to. This is not a reason to distrust well-maintained aircraft. Modern flap systems are designed with redundancy and fail-safe features, but when you're doing your pre-flight and checking flap travel, when you're running through your system's knowledge in a new aircraft type, understanding that asymmetric flap extension is a failure mode worth knowing about gives the emergency checklist entries their proper weight. The Bold Method team produced a solid technical breakdown of all four flap designs that form the foundation for today's segment. If you want diagrams showing the actual boundary layer behavior around each design, that article is worth your time. BoldMethod.com covers technical topics at a depth that is genuinely useful for working pilots, not just students. Here's what I want you to take away from this. Flaps are not just a speed management tool, they are a variable geometry system, and the design of that system shapes the aerodynamic personality of the aircraft you're flying. When you transition to a new type, asking what kind of flaps it uses is not an obscure technical question. It is a direct line to understanding why the aircraft will behave the way it does on approach, why the numbers in the procedures section are what they are, and what to expect when you go around. Good engineering leaves fingerprints. Flaps are one of the clearest places on any aircraft to find them. More at radiohangar.com. Thanks to Bold Method for the technical foundation today. I'm Tower Fly the Numbers.